Hello, and welcome to Me, the Wife and Wrexham AFC.
A weekly podcast and YouTube channel where we discuss all things Wrexham AFC from the point of view of long-term fans and new fans.
So sit back, put your feet up, relax, and let's get stuck in.
Hello and welcome back to episode 68 of Me, the Wife and Wrexham AFC. We have got a special episode today.
An absolutely really special episode. So no, it's not Monday. We know it's not Monday. And the reason it's not Monday is because it's Tuesday. That's why. And we are doing a very special episode today.
We have
an absolute Wrexham legend joining us today. So we've got Neil Roberts with us. So welcome to the show, Neil. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. What an intro. I'm not sure I'm deserving of it, but thank you anyway.
You are absolutely deserving of it. You played for Wrexham 1994 to 2000, and then again from 2006 to 2008. So it's about 130 appearances. I'm doing it all off the top of my head, this. About 130 appearances, 40-ish goals. Am I right in that saying that?
I think you know better than me, to be honest with you. Yeah, I'm not counting. But I'll take that anyway. It looks like a nice number.
Well, I was actually looking at the all-time top Wrexham goal scorers list. You're number 52 on there, Neil. So that's not too bad going.
No, that's nice. I've never even thought to look at that. So it's... that's really interesting. Yeah, and it's not something I was known for, to be fair. So it's I'm delighted to be in the top 100.
he's also won four caps for Wales as well. So we'll get onto that very shortly. Neil, I'm going to take you all the way back, right to the very beginning. So you're a local lad, and where did the Wrexham journey start for you? So when did you join up with Wrexham?
Well, from a playing point of view, I was around the age of, I think it was probably about 11. So I was playing local football in the Wrexham and District League. Thankfully, at one of the games where I did particularly well, there was a scout. Well, he was actually the sort of the academy manager, as it was at the time, Cliff Sear. So Cliff used to get out and about watching all the local games. And my parents were asked if it was possible that they could bring me down to training. And that's where it started, really. I was sort of an 11-year-old big Wrexham fan. So used to go and watch the games when I could. Started training in the Centre of Excellence at Wrexham at that age.
That's amazing. Did you play for Garden Village, Neil? I've got that in my head. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I played, I'm one of three brothers, and we all kind of started there as sort of the difference in age is sort of 18 months between the three of us. So I played with my eldest brother for one season, then he would move up into the next sort of group, and then my younger brother would then join me sort of playing in my team before I moved up. So it was quite nice for mum and dad. They didn't have to split themselves into three. They would always be able to see sort of the three of us playing within two games, you know.
What was it like playing with your brothers? Was it quite competitive, or because you're on the same team, was it sort of all right?
No, I think well, obviously, because we're on the same team, that always helps. But there was always a sort of competitiveness between us that we were sort of brought up that it's not sort of easy to get where you want to get in any way, shape or form. So, we like to have a battle and sort of competitions when we weren't playing for Garden Village. So, the back garden took a bit of a beating up, if you like, over the years.
So going back to your first team debut, what was it like taking your first or running out onto the pitch of the racecourse?
Yeah, I mean, my first team debut for Wrexham came against Chesterfield in the league. I came on for Cal Connolly, who was actually one of my heroes. So that in itself was a little bit surreal. I didn't expect to be in the squad. So I was I was told fairly last minute. I think there'd been a little bit of an illness going through the squad, and thankfully for me that happened, and I got my opportunity, and I got the last, I think it was 12 minutes, maybe something like that. And it was just a surreal moment, one that I dreamt of for forever, sort of thing. And I suppose the special thing is having all my family, all my friends there, to kind of, at the end of the game, sort of, yeah, it was quite an emotional one as well, I guess. So,
if fast forward a little bit, we'll go to your sort of Wales debut, because we're talking about debuts here, which came in sort of 1999. When it happened, and when you got the call up to the Wales team, what was that sort of feeling like? Was it a case of, did you feel that you were waiting for that call up and you deserved it, or did it sort of just come out of the blue a little bit for you?
Well, it came massively out of the blue, because I was in the under 21s at that time, and I played on the Friday night for the under 21s. I did particularly well in that game, and the then Welsh manager Mark Hughes came into the change rooms afterwards to say he'd like me to join up with the first team squad the next day. So I never knew. There was no sort of build up to the first team game. I was always going to go and watch. However, I didn't know until, I don't know, maybe 10 p.m. the night before. So that was a really, really sort of, it's probably the best thing to happen to me, to be honest with you, because there was no sort of stress or anxiety building up to the game. I went into that sort of changing room with looking around all my sort of boyhood Welsh heroes in there. And again, similar to my Wrexham debut, I came on fairly late on in the game. But again, looking around in the crowd, I had all my family and all my friends there again. And yeah, it was really, really special. I think when I've been asked this before, I think for me, my Wrexham sort of debut is always going to be the most special one. Just as, you know, I'm a proud Welshman. However, playing for my hometown club, which was obviously a massive, massive thing for me, that kind of stands out. But, you know, make no bones about it, I'm really, really glad that I got to be involved with the Welsh setup as well.
Was it a little bit more special, the fact that it was at the racecourse as well for you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean that. I had four caps, as you mentioned, and the other ones were all away. So, I'm really, really glad that appearance was at the racecourse, and I've still got my shirt. It's framed. There's a program with it from the game, and it was amazing, and something for my children to sort of be proud of as well, you know.
So before you actually went and had your debut for Wales, obviously you didn't know about it until about, like you said, till about 10 o'clock at night. Did you get much sleep that night? Because if it was me, I'd be like, I would not be able to get any sleep at all.
Well, to be honest with you, I did really, yeah, because I obviously played the 90 minutes in a tough game for the under-21s, and I think I was still sort of, you know, feeling the effects of that. So I did actually sleep really well. I'll be honest with you, I'm glad it happened the way it happened, because I'm one of those that I do get quite anxious about things, and I do overthink as opposed to sort of just kind of deal with, you know, what's happening. So it couldn't have been any better. And, you know, in answer to your question, yeah, I could sleep on a washing line. So I don't have a problem sleeping, honestly.
Yeah, I'm
you're exactly the same.
I'm exactly
you
the
are
same.
Exactly
yeah.
the same.
Yeah, I think so. You got when the first stint at Wrexham came to an end, you got a move to Wigan. To be fair, the move came at a time when the club probably needed the money, and you know it was a welcome boost to the club to sell you for the fee that we did to Wigan. The question is, and it might be a little bit of an awkward question, but at that point, did you want to go? You know, you're a local lad playing for your local club. And when this come on, was it a case of you could see some progress in your career and you were moving forward? Or was it a case of I want to play at this club for the rest of my career?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you'd be very, got to be careful with my words here, but I think you know, to say that you want to commit yourself to the club for the rest of your career at such a young age is a really big statement. And I don't think I ever said that. I'm happy to be corrected if I did, but I don't believe I ever said that. And I was advised by the club to get myself an agent. So when those discussions started to take place, I knew that there was sort of a plan, if you like, that I would be one of the assets that they could maybe move on for some much needed money. Now, in order for that to happen, obviously I have to agree, the clubs have to agree a fee, and there needs to be a number of things that need to fall into place. But when Brian Flynn, he called me, I was at home in the afternoon, and he said, he didn't call me, one of the directors called me and said, Brian Flynn wants to see you. So I got on the bus. I wasn't driving. I got on the bus in Garden Village. I went down to the training ground and saw Brian Flynn. And he was really, really honest, as he'd always been. And he was brilliant with me. And he just said that we've had an offer. And it's an offer that the club would like to accept. However, if you don't want to go, then, you know, you need to just be open and honest and tell me. So, I asked him then, you know, does this money mean that the club is going to be able to, they were building the Price Griffith Stand, as it was called then, or the Mould Road. So there were a number of things that they did, they could do with the money, that being one, and obviously to strengthen the squad again. So, I took myself away, went back home, spoke to mum and dad, spoke to my brothers and my close friends. And then, it was very much a case of, I think the best solution for everybody is that I go and try and further my career at a club that, in many ways, not too dissimilar to Wrexham now. They had a lot of finance at the time, very, very good owners. And they saw me as being part of their sort of plan to go through the leagues. And it was the best decision all round, I think.
That must be like really nice to know that you're wanted by another club. I mean, obviously it's sad you're leaving Wrexham, but it must be really a really nice feeling to go, do you know what? They've actually, well, headhunted is the word.
I dare say that you know, if it was an office job, that's exactly what it is. You know, that must be a nice feeling though.
Yeah, I think I know it. It's a really, really nice feeling. And I know the story behind it is that Wigan's manager and scouts, they came to watch Wrexham because they were looking at Cal Connolly. And I'm not saying I did better than Cal on that night, but on that occasion, I must have caught their eye and offered them something different to what perhaps Cal would have. And it was like, I had a couple of friends at Wigan as well, which probably helped. I knew a couple of the players, so they were obviously asked about me and whatnot. And I suppose the nicest bit is those sort of things. If somebody, you know, has said something good about me, then, you know, obviously I'm delighted. And I know they asked Mark Hughes. I know that Ian Rush was asked. So I'm like really humbled by having their opinion as well on me. So it's, you know, it was a really nice thing. Yeah.
God, imagine having like Ian Rush's like positive opinion about
you.
Yeah. Nice, that, wouldn't it?
It would be nice. It's never going to happen for me. I'm 42. No. It's not going to happen now. No.
You never know. You never know who's watching.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. But maybe for podcasting, certainly not for any sort of footballing skills that I've got.
I can't remember
left.
The last time you kicked a ball, to be honest.
So you spent 4 years, obviously, at Wigan. You spent a couple of years at Doncaster after that. And then Then you came back to Wrexham for a second stint at Wrexham. Everything that you, this is another awkward question. It's not a very nice question, to be honest, but with everything that you know now, looking back at that last 2 years, do you have any sort of regrets at coming back to Wrexham, the way that everything panned out when you came back?
No, no, because it ticked so many boxes, not only from a, you know, that moment in time. First and foremost, my family, I had a wife, young daughter. We needed some support around us because we were going to have another daughter. And it was time for me to sort of come home in many ways from a family point of view. And then secondary to that, the football, what I was promised and what was discussed and what I believed would sort of happen, was all right for me. It was all yes, where do I sign sort of thing. And you know, that as we all know now, wasn't the case. And unfortunately there were a number of things that didn't happen, and there were a number of false promises made, if you like.
Yeah, definitely. Before we get too much into the sort of second spell at the club, we've got, this podcast, strangely, has become a bit of a hub for international fans, hasn't it? So we've got a lot of Americans, Canadians, Australians that listen to us, and none of them have had the sort of joy of watching a Wrexham derby. No, you haven't. As a new fan, you haven't had it either. So I just wanted to touch on sort of the Wrexham-Chester derby a little bit, because you played in a few of them. I remember you scoring in one of them as well when we won 2-1. I remember you scoring a penalty. What, just to try and explain to everybody who's listening, you have your big games. We know you have, you know, your big games that you want to play in, but then you've got your derbies, which are like one step up from it. What's it like playing in a Wrexham Chester derby?
Well, that's like, it was something that in many ways for me was the biggest game, especially being a local Wrexham boy. You know, I had to be careful in the build-up. I wasn't able to go shopping to Chester. I couldn't go for food or drink to Chester. And especially afterwards, because of the way I celebrated, kissing the badge and, you know, letting them know that, you know, we're in town sort of thing. It's a hatred. It is a hatred. And obviously, playing in the game is really, really special. When you score in the game, you've got to grab the moment and enjoy it. The atmosphere is electric. I know you get a lot of derbies, you know, across the country. And, you know, for me, that one, that sort of, we're so close, yet it's a cross border. And it's sort of England, Wales, it's Wrexham, Chester. It's just massive. I think anybody listening, I can't really explain it any more than sort of what I've said there, really. It's just a really, really electric moment and a magical, magical game, because there's so much at stake. You know, the kind of people that work maybe is over in Chester, or Chester people work here, and I would love to see them come back and get back in the league, just so we could play them again, because the game's so good. But whether that'll happen, I'm not so sure. So some people don't want it to happen, but I'm somebody that just love those games. It's, you know, it's an extra added spice.
Do you know what? It's not going to happen, because let's be honest, they're crap at the moment, and they're not going to get back up. But
never say never.
No, but I'm with Neil on this one, because there's a lot of people who quite relish in the fact that they're a few divisions below us. Mm-hmm. Whereas I sort of wish they were better than they are. and they started moving through and perhaps did catch us up a little bit. And I know people will think that's mental, but I sort of do, because it's been so long since, it feels so long since we've had these them games.
When was the last derby between Wrexham and Chester then?
2018 maybe. Are you testing me now? I don't know, but it's a few years now. But yeah, I'm definitely with you on that one, definitely. So your second spell, obviously, as you've already mentioned, quite a few promises were made by the club, and a few things that didn't happen, and ultimately ended the sort of 2007 and 2008 season where Wrexham got relegated from the Football League. Now, I've seen a lot of interviews with you, Neil, and, I've seen a lot of, I've read through sort of old articles about the sort of abuse that the team got from, I'm going to call them non-fans, because, the way that the abuse is sort of sprayed around is awful. And because that year, you were getting abuse from certain fans, but I don't like calling them fans, but certain people you
idiots.
Were. But that same season, correct me if I'm wrong, you won fans player of the season, didn't you? In that season.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I got presented with that the night before I was released by the manager. So slightly ironic, I guess, but yeah, I mean, listen, I think, especially when if you've watched the documentary, and you might have seen myself talking on it, about those sort of moments, during that season. And again, my daughter speaks about it. Now, when she did her filming on that, I wasn't there, so I didn't know what she'd said. And so when I watched that documentary myself, it was kind of, it probably hit home. You know, how much it probably affected her, you know, let alone me, a young girl seeing her dad, getting abuse on certain occasions. And it didn't happen all the time. However, there were a few sort of, moments that should never have happened. And for her to witness it, that really sort of hurts me, you know what I mean? So, I think... everybody's entitled to their opinion. I'm not a shrinking violet. I can look after myself. I'm quite happy to have debate, and I know when I've not played well, as I know when I've played well. So I'm honest like that. I just don't think there's any place for it sort of happening, especially when you're away from that arena and you're with your family, sort of thing. So.
Yeah, it must have been a bit of a whirlwind, really. I because it's a season where you were getting abuse from certain fans at the end of that season. You were obviously not knowing whether your contract was going to be renewed and you were still going to be at the club. Then the club go and get relegated from the Football League. That must take such a toll on you, and with you being the captain of, at the time as well, that must take such a toll on you personally, all of that stuff all happening all at once.
Yeah, I do touch on this in the documentary. I'm not sure how much more will be on there, but it was one of those that I was sort of somebody that didn't show my feelings very well. I sort of hid a lot. I'm probably parked a lot to the back of the mind, and unfortunately it always comes back to the forefront when certain things happen. And I think that's something that happened with me, and I struggled in later life, if you like, and it was around 2016-17 where I had to reach out and go and get some support for what I was ultimately going through. And not all of it was linked back to certain moments in my career. And yeah, there was a lot of regret, and there was a lot of sort of, in many ways, sadness and disappointment that I'd never really dealt with, but decided, thankfully, to get some support. And I'm very, very lucky and fortunate that, with being a footballer, we have the PFA, the governing sort of body, if you like, on the Players Association, that helped me get some support. And I'll be eternally grateful for that.
That's actually a question I was going to ask you. Do you think that the support for players' mental health and things is a lot better now than when you played, or is it kind of the same sort of support?
No, I think it's a great question, because again, obviously some clubs are more sort of prepared or more or have the ability perhaps to have somebody there that is a specialist in that given area, psychiatrist or whatever. And I think now the game is a lot more open and a lot more aware about mental health. And I think the nice thing is that I think there's a real sort of understanding that footballers are humans at the end of the day. So, you know, the three of us now, we can have bad days in work. Football is exactly the same. It is work, ultimately. And we all have bad days, don't we? So it's something that I think as a collective, not just football clubs, being more aware, I think public, society, and we need to keep growing it, and we need to keep sort of, in many ways, supporting those that are struggling. And you just never know when it's going to creep up on you. And that was exactly what happened to me. So, I'm a big supporter and advocate.
Yeah, well, we've obviously, you know, we've experienced mental health in our family.
Yeah.
I hope you don't mind me saying.
No, not at all.
Ryan, he suffered really badly with mental health. And I don't think the support was there.
No, but I think it's an awkward one, isn't it? Because as men, we are very good at keeping everything inside and pretending that everything's okay.
I had no idea that he was going through anything.
And that's the thing. I think it has to get to a point where I think it's getting better. But, you know, like you said, you held on to things for so many years. And then, there has to get to a point where, as men, we have to reach out and ask for this help. And it has to be, I think it's better now. But I think there is still that stigma attached where men don't want to reach out and ask for help.
Yeah, well again, like, obviously, I'm older than you, but...
Not by much.
Well, I know I'm older than you, but it's... we're from a generation, right, that it was kind of toughen up, you need to man up, you know, roll your sleeves up and crack on with things. And I was part of that growing up, and I understand that, you know, that was sort of a generational thing, but it's so difficult to break that sort of, if you've been brought up like that and your peers and your, you know, your friendship groups and things are all similar in that way of thinking, then it can be difficult to speak. And, you know, I think it's super brave that you've reached out and that you've spoken. And, you know, I love hearing like things like that, because again, it shows that there is even the smallest chink of light you've got to grab onto. You don't have to, I don't know, somebody sent me, I think it was my sister-in-law, sent me a post that just said, you don't have to see the full sort of staircase, you just need to see the first step. And that is so, so relevant when you're going through that battle, because it is dark, it's not a nice place to be, but there's help out there. And, you know, certain things for me, I had to go through to sort of find my coping mechanisms, where I wasn't very good in one-to-one counselling, because I found that they were patronising me, because I knew they hadn't been where I'd been, and They hadn't experienced what I experienced, and I found that, and it wasn't their fault. They were trying to do their job. However, I really benefited from group counselling, because then that gave me the awareness and the knowledge that, oh, I'm not on my own. There's a CEO from somewhere who's suffering the same. There's a bank manager. There's a, you know, whatever walk of life and whatever role occupation you're in, it's, we're all the same, right? And, you know, when all said and done, you you have to find what suits you in terms to aid your recovery. And it's great to hear that you've come through as well. It's really nice.
I do think, though, sorry, we'll get off this subject in a minute, but I just think it's so important to talk about. Yeah. I think if you hadn't gone through that, and if you hadn't gone through that, do you think it's made you stronger people in your, like, everyday life? You know, you've been in the darkest depths of whatever, and now, you know.
Are you asking me first?
We'll ask Neil, because he's obviously the guest.
Go after you.
Okay.
I think it makes you a different person, if I'm honest, because I think what you find is that you've got ways of coping with situations which you didn't possess before all of this happened. So, yeah, I suppose that makes you stronger in that instance. But I think it makes you, for me personally, I think it makes you a little bit more vulnerable as well. And I find myself getting more emotional about things, not just sad things. I mean, I find myself getting more emotional about the really good, happy things as well.
I know, I've seen you at a Wrexham game where
we won. Yeah, that's what I mean. You know, if you go back years and years and years, I wouldn't have had tears in my eyes watching. Well, maybe there was nothing much to cheer about back in the day, but I just mean, you do find, maybe vulnerable is the wrong word, really, but I think you're a little bit more open to the world. Let's say that's a bit deep, but
that's a bit deep, yeah.
But I think you evolve into, you're the same person, but you sort of feel like you evolve into something else, and you're more open. A little bit more of an open book, and you sort of take more in and give more out, maybe. I don't know. What about you, Neil?
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. I think I definitely changed. I've always been an open book. So I like to take people on face value. I like to believe what they say. I don't need to sign a contract. I can shake somebody's hand and think, oh, that's going to happen. Sometimes to my detriment, sometimes not. And I think what it has done to me going through what I've been through is I tell my kids I love them every day. You know, I hug them. I do the same with my friends. Sometimes they don't like it, but I'll hug them. I'm not bothered. I'm a hugger. I think the emotional bit, I get quite emotional now, but the emotional bit is a huge thing for me. But what I've noticed is that I think my friends and family have become a little bit similar because I've rubbed off on them a little bit. I get emotional at Wrexham games every single game. And it's like I have to have a moment to myself and kind of go, wow. How did we win that? As an example, on Saturday, I had my young son there and I was like, oh, he doesn't need to see his dad crying at a Wrexham win. But on the same side, maybe he does, because it's okay. You know what I mean? So, I think the emotion is probably the biggest thing for me. I've become massively, massively emotional about everything. Especially where sort of family and friends are concerned, you know.
I've at the weirdest times sometimes as well. You know, you might be watching something. I found it, you know, when you're watching really stupid stuff sometimes, you know, like, I know X Factor's not on anymore, but when someone's got a really touching story and you're just going, whew, hang on a minute. And that was never, you know, and it's just the weirdest things just sort of catch you now. And I think once you let that guard down and you're a little bit more open, you know, to things, I think it's almost impossible impossible to get it back, which is a good thing, you know, because you want your guard to be down. You want to be open with people. And I think once it's gone, I think that's it. It's pretty much gone.
Floodgates have opened.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I don't think the documentary music helps, because that gets me every time. And I keep watching it.
Yeah. I love that. So I've got it on my Apple Music.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it is. I much prefer it to the first season. I think, like you say, it evokes a lot more emotion, I think. On to the documentary, Neil. We obviously, you know, we've seen you on the documentary a few times. I think the one bit, again, that was quite emotional for me was you and Mia looking through the scrapbook. And looking back at everything. Is that like a new thing, or have you always been sort of, have you always looked back over your career, or is that something that's quite recent to you?
No, it's like my kids have obviously grown up with football. So you know, even my son was born in 2010, so my youngest son, he's 13 now. But even though he missed my playing career at that time, I was working at Manchester City for 9 years. So he was still brought up within a football world, you know, the biggest in the world, as it happens at Man City. So they've never been able to escape from it, in all honesty, as much as sometimes I think they'd have liked to. But in terms of talking about football and whatnot, like Mia as an example, Mia, like from the earliest moment, just wanted to kick a ball with me. She wanted to go in the garden. She wanted to practice, you know, and she's, you know, she's still doing it now. They got me a football for last Christmas, so we could have a kickabout, you know what I mean? So, they all enjoy it, but in different forms. Mia is very much wants to play it and watch it all the time. So she's very, very knowledgeable on it. Macy, if there was an opportunity, my middle daughter, she's 16. If there was an opportunity to meet Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, she's there. and then Sam, my son, he kind of has little dips in, dips out, which I love, because me and him will go and play golf instead, or we'll play on the Xbox, or, you know, he's not all sort of 100% football. So it's a really nice sort of mixture, I think, for the three of them. And, you know, obviously Mia going through a lot of what I went through in terms of playing for a hometown, that kind of, you know, will always live with me as a super special moment.
I was going to touch on that. Obviously, the first father and daughter to play for Wrexham, and that must have been a special moment. The first game that she sort of played for Wrexham, that must have been a really, really touching moment.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's nothing that quite prepares you for it. Me being unstable emotionally, it's not a good thing. Those two coming together, but. That said, I don't know if it's ever been done before in a professional way. I'm not sure. I don't know. But, you know, for me to see, especially the game at the racecourse, which, you know, which was such a special occasion for all the girls, not just Mia. You know, they'd worked so hard over the last few years to get to that point, and that was amazing. And then, you know, the icing on the cake was the parade day, wasn't it? That the whole of Wrexham and further afield came out for. And it was something that the nice thing, and I always say this to Mia, is that what you've got to remember is every single moment, second, ball kicked has been captured, you know, because of the technology now, because of the social media, because of the way the documentary's gone about their filming. Everything's there for her. It's at her fingertips. So I would have loved to have had cameras following me as a youngster. And, you know, my mum and dad were brilliant. They captured some things. So we have got some home cinema sort of videos, I guess. So I think if we could say one thing that we're super grateful for, it's the fact it's been captured on camera.
I think Sian's got a whole raft of questions about the sort of more up to date with Wrexham. But just one last thing I wanted to ask before we move on to sort of the current team. When you were coming to, obviously you went to Rhyl after Wrexham. I think you had quite a sort of prolific season with Rhyl, really. I think it was your best sort of goals per game ratio, I think, while you were at Rhyl. When that was coming to an end, was there any part of you that was started to think, oh, bit of coaching, bit of management, you know, something along them lines? Or was it a case of this is sort of chapter done, let's move on to something a bit different?
I think that with me, there's always been sort of a possibility that I might go into management as opposed to coaching. Now, when they started to change all the rules and regulations around, you need the C, B, A, Pro, FIFA, Elite, whatever licenses, I started to kind of go, well, it's not really me. I did never have that sort of feeling that I'd like to be on the grass coaching. What I would like to have done is maybe been a manager and worked with a really great coach and person alongside me. And I think I'm quite confident about that. I think I would have done quite well because I love the man management side of things. But it was just one of those at Rhyl. I signed a 3-year contract and I went there really relaxed. I went there. There was pressure because I was quite a big signing, and I wanted to repay the faith that they'd shown in me. And I had a really good season. We qualified for the Champions League, won the league, the Welsh League, and they hadn't done it for years. And that was important to me. However, like towards the end of that season, I'd been approached by Manchester City to get involved in a new project that they were launching there, and that sort of pull for my next chapter in my life, sort of thing. It was too sort of big, so I ended up kind of leaving on good terms with Rhyl, and you know, I let the contract just fizzle out so they could spend money elsewhere, and I moved on to Manchester City, as I say, and spent, you know, the best part of 9 years at that club.
Alfie'd love that.
Yeah.
Our little son, I say little.
Yeah,
he's 11 now, but he's a Man City fan. So
he is, and that's not because of anything in particular. That's because
they're winning. Aren't they?
Yeah, that's you're very right. That is
he's a glory, you know, supporter.
Yeah, he is. Unfortunately, but. You know, he's very similar to your son, I think, a little bit. You know, we'll have weeks. He's got a season ticket at Wrexham with us. He's only 11. And then, you know, he'll have 3, 4, 5 weeks where he wants to come. He's excited. Yeah. He's there. And then he'll have 2 or 3 weeks where he goes, I'm not going to bother. I'm going to go spend some time with my nan, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And it's like, yeah, and I've got no issue with that. You know, there is. Sian asked me. She was sort of like, you know, do you wish he was into football more? And I was like, no, because he's got his own stuff going on. He's his own person, and he's got his own sort of thing. So I'm happy with that. So
okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So talking about obviously all the teams that you've played for, out of all those teams, who has been the absolute best player that you've ever played with?
There's been a few, but I would say from an international point of view, then Gary Speed, without a doubt. Not only as a player, but as a person, as a very, very close friend of mine. I miss him every day. And then I would say from a club point of view, there's a couple really that Do you want one from Wrexham and then one from the other clubs?
You do whatever you want, Neil.
Well, I think from Wrexham, I'd have to say Cal Connolly. He was just magic. He was, you know, super Cal Connolly. So you don't get that name, you know, the King Cal for no reason. So, I would say Cal Connolly from Wrexham, and then from my other clubs, Jimmy Bullard.
Oh, I love Jimmy Bullard.
Yes,
yeah, it'd have to be Jimmy. Yeah,
oh, he's amazing.
Yeah. I really like Jimmy Bullard, both as a footballer and as a human being. I think he is superb.
Oh, he's just so funny.
He couldn't sit still like this and do a podcast. I know that much. He'd have to be doing something, causing mischief somewhere. So
yeah, definitely.
What you see is exactly what you get with him. You know?
Yeah.
I think he's brilliant.
Yeah, he is.
So, you know, what if you could go back as you to your younger self, what advice would you give your younger self, obviously, everything that you've been through?
That's a really good question. I've not been asked that. I've never been asked that. I wouldn't do anything different. So I'm not going to sit here and say, don't sign for or don't do this. I think probably I would try and educate myself a little bit more about dealing with issues and facing up to things at the moment, as opposed to parking them in the back of my mind. I think that's my one regret.
Yeah,
and I know you shouldn't have regrets, but I do regret that. So. I think my younger self would definitely be more open and more forthcoming about how he was feeling, for sure.
I mean, with a career that you love, you know, as well, I can imagine as you look back, it feels like it went by in the blink of an eye as well, because, you know, obviously a footballer's career is a lot shorter than a policeman or an office worker, and the difference, you love doing what your career is. So I bet when you look back, it went just like that.
Well, yeah, it did. I mean, just on that last part about telling my younger self, I think that is what the documentary has allowed me to do for my kids. And anyone else that cares to listen or kind of appreciate it, is that it's told them what they need to be aware of, you know, and life isn't not all sort of highs. There's a lot of lows, and you just have to, as best you can, try and deal with them along the way. So hopefully they get the message, and I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
So it's been a bit of a roller coaster this season so far, it's fair to say.
Yeah, just a touch.
Just
yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Do you think that we're doing better than you expected that we would be at this point of the season? Or were you expecting more?
No, I wasn't expecting more, because I knew what the levels were going to be like in the league. So I think for a lot of fans, especially new ones, they've not seen league football. So until you do, you don't understand how good the levels are and what you're up against, sort of thing. So in terms of how I think the season's gone so far, I think it's gone really well. And the reason for that is that we started slowly, let's say. There was a little bit of sort of uncertainty about, you know, maybe it's our playing style and, you know, formations, et cetera, et cetera. However, I think that's the best time to get all of that out the way and sort of put it to bed. I'm a big believer in Parky, so I'm a big supporter of Phil. I think what he does with the squad that we've got is what we need. They're all on the same page. Yes, we've had a couple of dips in terms of, especially performance-wise, in the last few weeks. But what he's instilled in them is a never say die attitude. If they don't know when they're beaten. And like, even on Saturday, so I was very fortunate. I got to speak to Paul Mullin after the game, and one of the things he said was that in the 86th minute, he looked at the scoreboard, obviously saw the time, but knew that we were going to win. So that's what they've built between them. And that's what I love about this squad, is that they just don't know when they're beaten. And they can play football, but what they can also do is they know how to dig out a result. And that, as you know, it's been said over the years, is, you know, the sign of a really, really good potential promotion winning team is to win when you're not playing well.
Yeah. So do you think we're going up then this season?
Yeah, I think we will. I mean, I won't change it. I think we'll be in the playoffs. That was what I started with, and I'll finish with that as well. I think we've got more than enough to get into the playoffs. Who knows what January brings? If we can strengthen the squad in January, then that may give us that extra boost to go automatic. But as you've seen on Saturday with the Notts County game against Mansfield, anybody can beat anybody. Mansfield are a really good team, and but that said, I think there's probably 10 or 12 teams that can all sort of compete against each other.
Yeah, definitely. I think you know, looking at MK Dons at the start of the season, I thought, oh, they'll be right up there, and they're sort of mid-table, slightly below mid-table at the moment, but they've definitely got it in their squad to sort of push on. And anyone above them, really, I would say, is probably got it in their squad. Mm-hmm. I do think we've got the best squad, but I do sort of think that can be our downfall a little bit sometimes, that maybe we've got too many good players. And it sounds ridiculous, but you're sort of in a position where you go, you're looking round and you're going, well, who do we play? Because everyone deserves to be in a starting 11 somewhere, you know. And we had a chat about Jordan Davis on our not our last episode, the one before, where the question for about him is, you know, he's a local lad and he wants to play for Wrexham, but he isn't getting any game time. And how good he is that he's not getting enough game time is crazy. And it's sort of like, how long does that go on before maybe he starts going, ooh, I need some more football than I'm getting, do you know, at the moment?
Yeah, I think Jordan will be having those conversations with Phil on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I think he'll also understand that he's coming back from injury again, and you know that's going to play a big part for him. However, he's hitting form now. He's scoring goals. He's ticking all the boxes to potentially push, you know, not only Elliot Lee but others for their position, and that's a good thing. It's a great thing for Parky. You know, it's that won't be a worry for him. That's a bonus. You know, same goes for Youngie. Youngie's a player that I really, really admire and, you know, I have a lot of time for. However, I think George Evans just gives us something extra that Youngie doesn't. And George didn't play particularly well on the weekend. However, he still gives you something that you just think, you know what, he might create something. There's a little bit more going forward, I would say, with George. But across the back, you know, the back three or four, whatever he plays, you got Tozer out the squad, you know. You've got Boyle to come back in as well if we needed. Tunnicliffe came on Saturday, didn't he? So he's chomping at the bit. I love it, I do, because I think that's how it should be.
Yeah.
And if you don't play well, you're not too big not to come out the team. So yeah. You know, if Paul Mullin goes through, you know, a time, and he will do, where he's not scoring but not playing well at the same time, there's no reason why he can't come out the team, because you've got Fletch on the bench at the minute. Ollie, you know, will be looking over his shoulder at the way Stephen performs when he comes on. And then you've got Sam Dolby as well, who didn't particularly start the season well, but, you know, he came on and he made a difference on Saturday. So,
yeah
I think it's all positive, and yeah. And Parky will be rubbing his hands together with the selection choices, I'm sure.
And we got Jake Bickerstaff, obviously, who
he's
been
amazing.
Every time, I always say this, every time Jake comes into that team, he never ever lets us down with his work rate and his performance. And again, if he was at another club, he might be playing every week. You know, he literally does look like he's got that much quality that, you know, that could be the case. But who wouldn't want to play for Wrexham at the moment? That's the thing.
Yeah, and it's a football is again is about being patient. It's about taking the opportunity when it comes to you, and then you've got to have a lot of luck. You've got to have a lot of luck, and you know there'll be injuries as well. We can't forget that. So we're going to need the squad. We're going to need the strength and depth.
Do you have a favourite player out of the squad that we have now, whether they're always on the bench or they're in the starting 11? Have you got a favourite player?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Jordan for me is probably my favourite player. I look around and I've got a lot of respect for Toza, for Ben, a lot of respect. And I, of course, like, you know, Paul Mullin and Elliot Lee, you know, they're everybody's favourite, but they do the job. They are so, so good. You know, they're better than this level. However, you wouldn't know when you meet them. They're not in any way, shape or form big-headed or anything like that. And I can say that for all the lads. I think I've been really fortunate to have met all of them, really. And that's the one thing that I think Parky has done as well, is he doesn't allow anybody to be bigger than the club. And that's how it should be. The manager should always be above them all. If they need telling, they get told. And, you know, there is a policy in there, but there's a swear word attached to it. So I won't say it and swear. But they have a policy that there's no certain people within that squad. I'm sure you can fill in the blanks for that if you need.
I'm not sure I can.
Yeah.
I'll tell you later.
I'll tell you when we're finished. Yeah. just before we do go, just for everybody who's listening and out there, you know, we've talked a little bit about mental health on this episode. So I just wanted to remind everybody that anybody who's struggling, they're more than welcome to always get in touch with us to talk to us. We're good friends with Steve as well, who runs Dragon Chat. It's a weekly peer support group, and they run that on Zoom. That'll be down in the description on this video if you're watching on YouTube. So anybody who is struggling, please do not hesitate to get in touch or check out DragonChat-SteveLloyd on Twitter for any help. Neil, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It's been so nice, and we just want to say thank you for agreeing to do it. It's been amazing.
It's a pleasure. And just touching there on Steve Lloyd, he needs a really, really big shout out, and he needs a lot more acknowledgement, I would say, from the football club for the work that he's done, not only recently, but in years gone by when perhaps it wasn't as sort of made aware to everybody who was behind what he was behind. So I'm a big fan of Steve, and I'm wishing well as well.
Yeah, so are we. Well, thank you very much, Neil. It's been amazing. Thank you.
Pleasure.
And thank you to everyone out there for tuning in again this week. And we'll see you again next week.
Bye.